We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Welcome to the Lucky Let Court Podcast, a Tennis Now production sponsored by Tennis Express and a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Otto. Happy to be with you on Monday, August 7th, as we look back at the Mubadala City DC Open in Washington, D.C., as well as the other events that took place last week across the ATP and WTA tours. We'll also be looking ahead to this week's action in Canada, the National Bank Open in Toronto and also in Montreal for the women. Some big matchups as the first 1,000-level events of the North American hard court swing take place. But before we look ahead, we're going to look back. We had Tennis Now contributor Eric Goodriss at the City Open doing the full bug for us last week, contributing lots of content, and he will give us our insights on what he saw in the nation's capital. We'll also be joined by Richard Pagliaro, Tennis Now editor and contributor, and we have a nice long discussion on all the good stuff we saw last week, as well as looking ahead to the rest of this exciting North American hard court swing. This week, of course, we'll see the return of top-ranked Carlos Alcaraz and Iga Swiatek in Canada. So lots to look forward to, lots to talk about. Let's get straight into the interviews now. All right, ready here to talk some tennis as the Masters events and 1,000-level events kick off in Canada. We're here to talk about the City Open and the events of the week gone by. Eric Goodriss was at City Open every damn day doing great work for Tennis Now. So we're going to open our conversation with a little discussion on that tournament. Had a little different feel this last week with the WTA event being a 500. I think that brought a little extra energy. Eric and Richard, great to speak with you both, first of all.
And, great to be here.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's great to speak with you both.
So, Eric, you were there in the press room grinding it out, I think, from before the beginning of the tournament till the bitter end. So tell us a little bit about your experience there.
Sure, yeah. So this was my ninth time, hard to believe, ninth time attending the event. As you've mentioned, it has expanded once again. So now it is the first ever combined ATP-WTA 500 event. And I would say and of course there's a new sponsor, co-sponsor as well. So I would say the changes were subtle compared to last year. Obviously on the women's side, because it's a 500 event, definitely there were more higher ranked players playing the tournament, some players attending DC for the first time. And because of the nature of the draw, there were some really excellent, even first round matches, like Svitolina Azarenka, for example. So definitely took the women's event to the next level. Of course, bearing in mind that there's still disparity between the prize money between the men and the women, but the tournaments are working to meet a goal to have that parity in the next couple of years. So that's something they're working on. Mm-hmm. I would say in terms of the overall fan experience, it's again, there's many, many sellout sessions. The event has certainly upped its game in terms of like amenities and dining options and just the other things you can kind of do besides watch the tennis. So again, I know people here in the area that don't really follow tennis that much, but we're excited to go just for a day just to check it out because they've heard so many great things about it. So the organizers have done a great job of enhancing things and making it more popular in the area. I guess the next question is with the expanded popularity, of course that means more people. Parking was a big issue, as it always is up here. So the question is it in the future is it going to be able to remain at the current site where it's always been in Rock Creek Park, which is, of course, part of the National Park Service, or does it at some point get moved to another location, the area, bigger stadium? So those are all sort of questions that the organizers have to consider down the road. But overall, it was yet again a great tournament.
Good stuff, Eric. Good stuff. And you mentioned the prize money. It is pretty interesting, the disparity between the ATP champion, who was Dan Evans this year, $353,445 in his pocket versus Coco Gauff's take, which was $120,150 for the winner. And there's a lot of gap to make up, which I think they will need to do. They've promised to do in the next 3 or 4 years. That should be interesting. But Mark Iron got a lot of money and he's got a lot of influence. So maybe some more changes are on the way. What's your take before we talk to Richard a little bit, Eric? What is your take on this, on the setup at Rock Creek Park? Do you think it's better off staying there? What are the limitations? What do you think needs to happen over the next 2 years to create, I guess, some long-term stability for the event?
Sure. So again, going back to the original founders of the event back in 1969, of course, that includes the great Arthur Ashe. I mean, the one reason why they wanted it to be in the area is so it could be accessible to all communities within the area. So the stadium itself is definitely at some point will need some rehabilitation. It's just an older stadium. But then again, as I said, it's a bit of a question because it's on DC property. It's a National Park Service, so there's a lot of different stakeholders involved in terms of who controls the land and access and things like that. As you said, Mark Iron is the owner of the tournament. He certainly has enough influence to make things happen. So I guess it's a question again of do they keep it where it is, which is where everybody knows where it is and it's accessible, parking excluded, or do they think about down the road potentially moving it either to a new stadium or an existing stadium? I think it's also going to be interesting to see moving forward when the Masters events ahead of them move to the 2-week schedule, to see kind of how that impacts that specific tournament since it comes right before. So lots of things that will need to be thought out in the next couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. But I think we can all agree that the event has a lot of charm. It has a lot of energy. It's a great way to kick off sort of the bigger events, the first 500 of the North American Hardcourt Swing. Richard, before I ask you any more specific questions, what is your take on that prize money, that gap with the men making so much more now? Is it just due to existing TV deals? Why is there such a discrepancy, and how do you think they're going to figure out a way to get this remedied and have men and women in 3 or 4 years earning the same amount of money?
Yeah, I'm assuming, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming it's when they bought the license that was the existing prize money structure under the license that they bought when they did the deal. So I think that's the reason. From what I saw of Mark Iron's presser there, that he's promised that it would be equal. I think Eric would know this better because he was there, but I think he said by 2026. Am I right or wrong about that? I thought he said that's the plan anyway. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at the tournaments, I mean, you could argue, like Eric said at the top, when you had Azarenka, Svitolina right out of the box, or when you had Svitolina, Pegula, or like, you know, Coco, Bencic, the Olympic gold medal. I mean, so you could argue a lot of the women's matches were more high profile, more marquee matches. So I don't think the disparity is right, but I'm assuming it's because of the contract.
Yep. Yeah, and I think the tours have put out a statement and put out their plan going forward. They have to have the thousands line up in a certain time frame in the 500s. I'm not sure the exact years. Eric might know, but if not, not a huge deal. The point is there, and the exciting fact of the matter is that they're moving towards getting on the same page. I mean, if you look ahead to this week in Canada, the men are making twice as much money as the women again, and it's both 1,000 points for each one. So those things need to change, and it's exciting that the tours are going to address that. And who knows, maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, we see one big tour, which is what a lot of people seem to be talking about and hinting for. But in any case, equal prize money is not really in existence yet, though we do celebrate the 50-year anniversary of the U.S. Open giving equal prize money, and then, of course, all four slams have done it, but we still got a ways to go, and it's interesting to see how they're going to make up the ground. Should we talk some tennis?
And Andy Murray was asked about that in D.C., and he basically said he doesn't think it'll be unilaterally across the board equal until you see a true merger between the ATP and WTA, and I'm assuming the reason for that is just you would ask the men to take a pay cut to bring the women's up right now. If you're dealing with the same amount of prize, that's what would have to happen, and they're not going to do that. So that was Andy Murray's point. That was an interesting one, I felt.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Let's get to the tennis, and I'll start with you, Richard. Yes, when did Coco Gauff win? I can't even remember now. Yes, yesterday's finals were both yesterday. Seems like a blur. I'm confused with the rain delay in the men's finals. But Coco Gauff finishes off the title run at D.C. It's three top 20 wins in that event for Gauff, the first time she's recorded three top 20 wins since 2021 Rome. She's now won four in a row versus the top 20 for the first time ever. A lot of news around Coco Gauff during the week. Brad Gilbert is now working as a consultant. Pere Riba is coaching her. She's happy. She's evolving. Tell us, Richard, what you saw different from Coco Gauff, maybe that we saw that we didn't see a month ago at Wimbledon. Everybody talks about the forehand. Has that really improved, or was this just a fact of matter that Gauff played a great tennis and everything's kind of the same? She's always been a pretty damn good tennis player, ranked 7 in the world heading into the tournament, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's well said. We forget she's only 19 years old. I mean, she's still learning to put it all together. So, yeah, I felt there was a few things. I mean, the first thing was the serve and return. I mean, look at the players that she beat. Not just beat, she dismantled, like I said earlier, Bencic, gold medal champion, Samsonova, defending champion, who arguably has one of the best forehands in the game and a great kick serve, who plays much flatter, harder. And then, you know, Sakari, we all know about her struggles in semis and finals, but she's a perennial top 10 player who had the career winning, you know, head-to-head record. So she had to deal with different kinds of opponents who were dangerous, and she not only beat them, I mean, she took it to them. And I thought her serving was really, really smart. She didn't just go try to blow it past them. She mixed in the kick on the deuce side. She hit some nice slice serves, took some pace off. And if you look at her, the ratio, the ace to double fault ratio, I think against Bencic it was 5-1 aces to double faults. I think Sakari was 7-3 or 7-4. So she's getting really popping it, getting some free points, and also serving smartly, using the whole box. But to me, the big two takeaways were, number one, her emotionally, she looked more relaxed. She was having fun. She was smiling. She had great positive energy, and the crowd loved that. She had great energy from the crowd. You even saw when she won, she danced at the end. It was just more of a happy experience for her. She didn't look stressed as much. But as far as the forehand, I felt like what she did was, let me just use all of my skills, like my all card. Let me make the whole court matter. Let me come in sometimes. Let me use the slice, bring the opponent in. Like, use everything I have, and then they can't just stand there and bang at my forehand because I'm using my variety. So you saw her loop a lot of the heavier forehands, hit the flatter backhands, hit the slice. I felt she just used it all. She used the total game, which was really fun to see, and it seemed fun for her to play that way too. And she even made the comment, I think it was after the Samsonova match, Eric would remember better, where she said, I realized I'm back in the Washington, D.C. sign, like way behind the baseline. I don't want to be back here. And I thought that was such a smart, perceptive thing, like, let me get back up right up on the baseline and use my offense too. Don't just use my defense, use my offense.
Yep. Eric, give me your thoughts being close up and personal with many of Coco's matches during the week. What are some of your observations from the way she played?
Yeah, I mean, as many things as Richard already said, I think she, again, there's been so much talk about the forehand, and even she in her press conferences was like, look, I get it, you know, my forehand has been a problem, and so she's been trying everything to figure that out, and we've seen that at least this week that it's certainly gotten a lot better. I mean, certainly like in the Sakri match, of course Sakri was targeting the forehand, but a lot of the times Gauff was winning those forehand-to-forehand exchanges, so that was certainly a positive development. And the other thing, of course, there's a lot of talk about Brad Gilbert and what he's brought to her game. And one thing that she said after the final was, that he's told her to also just take time between points, where she says in the past she would, if she was kind of in a difficult spot in a service game, she would kind of rush through it. Whereas he told her just to kind of like, you know, if you need to take a moment, use the full shot clock, serve clock, you know, collect yourself. And she said that actually is something that she does in practices. So, and she plays better when she just takes that moment to kind of reset. So I think it's a combination this week, some of the technical stuff on the forehand side, of course, but then just also just like the match management, where we've seen in the past where she's gotten in behind and she'll just kind of like rush through the points and end up losing. So I think a lot, very promising. I think we should also give credit to a great insight that Andrea Petkovic, who was commentating for Tennis Channel, many of her matches, said that when a player takes on a new coach, there's that initial like rush of excitement and positive feeling. But Andrea said it usually takes about 1 to 3 months to finally see those results. So so we have a lot to look forward to in the next 3 months.
Yeah, for sure. Well said. Good stuff, Eric. Yeah, very commendable from Coco. You know, bringing in other voices and being open to other voices, and commendable to both of her coaches, for first for Pereira, who's a younger guy, is fairly new to the tour, did a lot of coaching with Zhang of China and helped her to get to a really high level last year. And it's nice to see that he's working with Brad Gilbert. Those two look really comfortable together, and it's not all about these coaches. It's really about Coco and her finding ways to up her game, and she did so nicely this week. The energy, seeing her do it, win her first title on home soil, just amazing. It just gives you a little glimpse of what we might see more from her more in the future. So very exciting development with Coco Gauff, and we'll look forward to see, you know, how she backs it up in Canada. Pretty decent draw. Got a bye up there and then faces either Rebecca Marino or Katie Bolter up in the top half with Iga Swiatek. Could see that in the semifinal. Could see a quarterfinal with Jess Pegula in Canada. So lots to look out for. Very exciting. Very exciting stuff. How about the men's side? Dan Evans. What's up with that? 33 years old, oldest champion at the City Open on the men's side since 1988, Jimmy Connors. It was fantastic the way he took out Francis Tiafoe, and then took it all away for a title run, defeating Talon Griekspoor in yesterday's final. Who wants to go first and talk about the great tennis that Dan Evans played at the City Open?
I'd just like to say that it shows what a beautiful sport tennis is. If you look at the heartbreak Dan Evans had the prior week when he had the match points and wound up, you know, losing that match, and then you have to bounce back from that and come back to D.C. and you win the biggest title of your career, of your life, and playing some of the best tennis of your life. I mean, it just shows the opportunity every week to kind of make it happen for yourself, and he did. And I got to be honest, I thought Dimitrov was going to beat him. I mean, Dimitrov has been put together a really nice stretch of tennis, you know, for the last several weeks. You look at what he did at Queens, Wimbledon, et cetera, and I thought Evans' confidence just wasn't going to be there, but also to beat Big Foe, the wins he put together, and also to bring back, you know, I was concerned after Barty retired, maybe the slice isn't going to be what it was, and to see him and Dimitrov, it was basically slice for slice on the backhand side. To see him use the slice as a weapon as well as he did and set up his forehand was really, really fun to see. And also I felt what he did really well is when he would get the break the next game, he would have some of his best serve games right after the break, and he hit that serve down the tee really, really well when he had to.
Yeah. Eric, we talked about this maybe being a deep cut final, maybe not one for the casual fans, Dan Evans versus Talon Griekspoor. They both knocked out Americans that I think a lot of people wanted to see make a run. Francis Tiafoe lost to Evans in the quarters. Griekspoor took out Fritz in the semis. But nevertheless, we got a lot of good stuff from these two players, and it just teaches us that there are many layers in the men's game right now.
Oh, absolutely. And I thought even before the tournament started that the men's event was wide open just because of who was in the draw and some of these storylines. Of course, Tiafoe desperately wanted to win his home event, and of course, there's always next year, but I guess it's an interesting mix where he put so much expectation on himself to win that tournament. And then there's so much expectations from the local fans. And so it's a lot for him to process, but again, taking nothing away from Dan Evans, who, you know, he said that he was playing well in practice, but it just never translated to the match court. And you look at his season before DC, I mean, he did get to one semifinal in Barcelona, but other than that, it's been like first-round loss after first-round loss. And it's, as Richard said, that's what the beauty of tennis is, that as if the belief is there, I mean, a player will say like that they know they're right there, and it just takes one good week to like change not only their season, but even their career. It's just having that belief to bounce back. And also telling Greek sport, I mean, he was probably a revelation for the casual tennis fan, but he's been putting together a very solid season. And he proved it again this past week that he's now someone to definitely keep an eye on. Now he's going to be close to top 25. So definitely there's as you said, there's lots of great players that feel like they belong right there with the best.
Yeah, Greek sport was really a revelation a bit. You know, he's got two titles this year already. I haven't watched him that closely, but man, great mover, a lot of power. You know, really good at defending his serve, big booming ground strokes. Really like his game. Just, you know, kind of a quiet personality, not that easy to notice. But he wins over Monfils, JJ Wolf, then Fritz. You know, great tournament for him, and looking forward to seeing more of him as well. As far as, you know, you touched on it a little bit, the American men. You know, interesting storyline. It's just the beginning of the hard court summer. We're going to come in with a lot of expectations for the likes of Taylor Fritz, Francis Tiafoe, Tommy Paul. I mean, you know, Sebastian Corda was quiet at City Open, lost his first match. Richard, what do you think's going on with the American win? It's kind of too early to tell, right? I mean, it's a long summer ahead.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, and I think we'll know a lot more after Toronto and Cincy. But I think with Fritz, you know, like you said, Greek sport played really well. I mean, Fritz has put together a nice run with Atlanta and D.C., and it wasn't like I didn't feel like he fell apart or, you know, got tired, or he just got beat in the end. Yep. But he's played well, and as Eric touched on, Big Foe, it's just a lot of pressure trying to perform, especially when he said before the tournament, this is one of my goals, to win this tournament, and you know how badly he wants to do well there. Sometimes that can sort of boomerang back against you. You want to do so badly, so well, and then, you know, it's just hard with the pressure. And Eubanks, you know, coming off Wimbledon, you had to expect there's going to be a little bit just emotionally to keep that energy up. So I think this week is going to tell us a lot. It's going to tell us a lot going forward.
Yeah, and I also think that Francis, you know, it may have not gone the way he wanted it to, but he did have KD there for his first match. And that was pretty cool moment with Kevin Durant at the City Open. I mean,
he lost to the eventual champion. When you lose the eventual champion, you can't beat yourself up about that.
Yeah. I think, you know, ultimately, in my opinion, you guys can weigh in on this. I think it's good for Francis that he shoulders that pressure, that he goes out there and goes on record, says he wants to win this event. Deals with the pressure, doesn't come out the way he wants to, but he's going to have plenty of opportunities. And really, his big target is backing up his semifinal run in New York.
Yeah, he's going to have plenty of opportunities, but he's also going to have plenty of pressure, because those points in New York, that's a big, you know, that's the difference between staying in the top 10 and being out of the top 10. So I agree, but it can go both ways. But I hope he can harness that energy like he did last year, and he really rode it like rocket fuel.
Yeah. Eric, was the vibe a little different on site in the stadium for Francis matches? It seemed like there was some real energy happening with him in the crowd.
Oh, absolutely. And I just think, just especially since that run to the U.S. Open last year, it's only just added to his popularity overall. There's probably definitely more fans in the crowd that wanted to see him for the first time, potentially even after that run in New York. So he's always had the fan support in D.C., but now it's grown, and it will continue to grow so long as he kind of backs up these great results that he's been having. So he desperately wants to win D.C.
Yeah,
I think he will do it 1 year. it's just, it's like, as Richard said, it's just balancing all the expectations.
Yeah, and let us not forget, Fritz, number 9 in the world, Tiafo, number 10 in the world. These guys must be doing something right.
Exactly.
We can move on and just talk a little bit about what happened elsewhere on the tours this week. Stefanos Tsitsipas grabs a title in Los Cabos. He goes 10-0 against Alex de Minaur. I don't know. Do you guys think it really can propel Tsitsipas, who has really never done anything at the U.S. Open? You'd think he'd be able to do more there. He's 5-5 lifetime, never been past the third round at the U.S. Open, but a really good hardcore player, Aussie Open finalist, has done damage at the Masters events on hard courts in North America. Do you think maybe it's time for Tsitsipas to come to New York in a month from now and make some waves?
I do think that he has the game to do well there, and if you really dig deeper, losing to Alcaraz in New York, knowing that Alcaraz is now U.S. Open champion, that's not that, although Alcaraz was not the Alcaraz of today when he lost to him, but, the Bjorn, the Coric match, the one that's the real match. I felt that was a real stumbling block for him in New York emotionally, because that's a match he really let get away. So if he can get past that, yeah, I think, like you said, he has the game, and especially now with the forehand really dominating from the center of the court and dictating play with the forehand, I think he has a shot, although I would definitely put the group of Alcaraz, Djokovic, Medvedev, and even Holger Rune, I would like his chances more.
Holger Rune, what a talent, yeah. So, Eric, any thoughts on the other events outside of the City Open, or were you just in your City Open bubble?
It was more or less in the City Open bubble, but did happen to catch some of Dominic Thiem's feel good run at his local event as well. Of course, that was on clay, but again, to see him get back to a final and build some momentum certainly can help him heading into the U.S. Open. So if anybody needs some momentum and some positive eyes, it's Dominic Thiem for sure.
Good point. Guess Thiem is up 32. He's the biggest riser in the top 100, gets back to number 84 in the world. Still 29 years of age. I think a lot of people are counting him out a little bit too early. What say you, Richard? Does Thiem have the stuff to get back to Grand Slam finals, top 10, top 5 even?
I don't know about top 5 or Grand Slam finals, but he has the ability in the game, I think, to get back to top 25, let's say. And also, what I was really encouraged about was he lost the first set in like 3 of those matches. Yeah. And Eric mentioned the 5 match points he saved against Laszlo, but I mean, he had to come back like 3 different times. I mean, they were big comebacks. So that shows you right there that the desire and the fight and, the willingness to do whatever it's there. It's not like he's just going out there like, hey, I'm just going to see what happens. He really, really wants to come back from what I saw at that tournament. Now, the big thing is now coming from clay, which he loves, to hardcore, where he doesn't have as much time to uncoil on those swings. It's a different story. Can he carry it through it? To me, it'll be interesting to see who has a better North American hardcore season, someone like Thiem, who's a former U.S. Open champion, or someone like Andy Murray, who's a former U.S. Open champion, because you could argue Murray's game is more suited for these kind of conditions. But like Eric wrote about this on the site, just trying to close some of these matches, you wonder if just psychologically there's some scar tissue from that Tsitsipas match. I guess you could say the same thing with Sakari in a different way.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Let's circle back and Eric, you're in a City Open bubble, so let's piggyback on that Andy Murray thought and talk a little bit about Muzza, who is 10-11 on the season, which is crazy thinking of how well he's done and how many crazy, exciting, dramatic matches he has played. And before I hand it to you, Eric, I want to say that the message to me is it doesn't really matter ultimately if Murray hits his targets at the age of 36 in terms of ranking, titles, performance at slams, getting back second week quarterfinals, whatever. To me, it's enough to have him doing what he's doing. It's awesome. He's such he's just such in love and so much passion with the sport, and his matches are so compelling that ultimately there's disappointment when he doesn't get where you think he might get, but it's still such a wild ride and so worthwhile.
Yes, I agree with you on that, but I will say just Murray after that match you could tell that he thought he could win it. And it was a great match. I mean, with Fritz. And, but as he said afterwards, he said, he's just feels frustrated that, he feels like his game is in a better place than it was last year, but yep. he's been losing these close matches. And that's what he's made his living off of, is kind of grinding through these tough matches. So yes, Murray is in it for the love of the game for sure. But my takeaway is that he feels like he's got one more big run in him. And to get to do that, A, he's going to have to get his ranking up so that he can get seeded at the majors, so he's not having to run into an Alcaraz or a Djokovic first round, potentially.
Yep.
And he can kind of work his way through. So, yes, it's both sides. Yeah, he's definitely in it for the love of the game, but he definitely feels like he's got what it takes to have one more big run, wherever that big run takes place.
Currently number 40 in the world. What say you, Richard? Do you think Murray has a Grand Slam quarterfinal in him?
Yeah, I do, and I think Eric hit it right on the head when he talked about the ranking, because he knew if he wins that match, he makes a deep run there. It's a difference between potentially being seeded in New York and being an outlier, and if you're an outlier, you know, you could go down in the first or second round. So he understands the value, you know, of these tournaments going in. But I'll tell you, I like the way he closed that first set again. He hit two forehands that were like 90 miles an hour back-to-back, where he just unloaded on the forehand. So I like when he mixes in the aggression. You know, that's not his natural style of play, but just once in a while to just show it, to just unload once in a while. So I thought what I saw of him, I thought he played pretty well there.
Good points. Lots to look. I mean, I still have the hope that Eddie's going to come through, and like, it just needs things to break his way a little bit more. And, you know, Fritz played a great match and finished him off. And, you know, from a set down, that was a heck of a match. One of the highlights of the tournament, I would say. So yeah, we'll look forward to Murray. We'll see if he can, you know, I think at the very least, I see him doing it at Wimbledon. It was unfortunate that it didn't happen this year, but I think that he's got that quarterfinal in him for Wimbledon, and maybe even at the U.S. Open. But you're right, Eric. He does need to get make up those next eight ranking spots and get himself a seed. He's just having too much work to be done in the first two rounds of these slams lately, and that's just killing him at his age and in his situation. I guess we can look forward to... Well, Richard, you wanted to talk a little bit about the comeback vibes. We got Wozniacki in action this week. Caroline Wozniacki making her long-awaited comeback in Canada. Kind of a little bit of a comeback vibe at the City Open with Dan Evans coming in off of six straight tour-level losses. What's this comeback theme you wanted to talk about, Richard?
Well, also, Jen Brady, Eric wrote about that in D.C. to see her. You know, it was only, 2 years ago that she was in the AO. She was in a Grand Slam final, so to see someone like that come back, who has pretty much a different game because of the spinniness and the heaviness of her game, it would be nice to see her, you know, just be able to play consistently. And Wozniacki, I'm really intrigued because she spent a lot of time as a commentator for Tennis Channel, and we see how that paid off for Christopher Eubanks. So I'm intrigued to see what, if she comes back as the Wozniacki we all remember playing that style, or if she sort of added some subtleties and some nuances based upon what she's seen as an analyst and how she's seen the game evolve and change. And that's always intriguing. And also, just to jump back on the earlier point that Chris, you made at the top, where you said about Dan Evans, where he felt, hey, I'm playing well in practice. And I think that's something that can apply to Murray and to all these players. Even if you want to go back to Wimbledon, that's something Marketa Vondrousova, she said a couple times in the press, like, hey, I was playing well. Even though I don't have any grass pedigree, even though I have a losing grass record, I was playing in practice. These top players, I was playing well. So sometimes that can spill over, and it'll be interesting to see what that means in terms of Wozniacki, because they saw that social media post where she was hitting with Holger Rune, and I don't know who she's been training with consistently or practicing, but she looks fit. I mean, she was always fit, but she must be feeling good just to make this kind of leap.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. She'll face Kimberly Burrell in the first round and could face Wimbledon champion Marketa Vondrousova in the second round.
Right.
Should be interesting. Eric, what are your thoughts on Wozniacki this week and maybe some other comeback names? Milos Raonic is another one who's getting back into the mix.
Right, absolutely. So, yeah, again, I'll be interested to see how Wozniacki performs in her first match back. If she does play Vondrousova, I'd just be curious to see how Wozniacki responds and how Vondrousova kind of responds now with, you know, more attention on her. Certainly will be great to see Milos Raonic back in Canada. I have fond memories of when I went to Montreal. My goodness, almost 10 years ago, when Raonic had that run to the finals, and of course all of Canada was cheering him on. So if he's going to make some noise, and he's definitely going to do it there at his nation's event. So good to see him back. It'd be interesting to see kind of how he performs.
Yeah, one of the most dominant servers really of his generation. I mean, when he's on his game, you better just like hope you can get him in a tiebreaker. I wonder if he's going to be able to bring that same serving prowess, and if he does, you know, tonight against Francis Tiafoe could be one heck of a match.
Yeah, totally, and especially if Tiafoe's still having a bit of a hangover from losing in D.C., and you know, he's going from D.C. where everybody was for him till tonight where everybody will be against him, so it'll be a very different background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never a dull moment with our sport. A couple stats I'm going to throw out today just for the heck of it, because I was doing a little prep for this podcast. The last three players on the men's side to do the Canada-Cincinnati sweep, Rafter, 98, Roddick, 03, Nadal, 2013, all went on to win the U.S. Open. Anybody think that Carlos Alcaraz could be the next player to do that sweep?
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
I don't know. I don't know. I think, I mean, if he wins Canada, then we'll see. I think it's interesting to kind of see how he's going to, how he's going to perform this week, just having won Wimbledon, all that expectation, and we'll see. But if anybody could do it, it certainly could be him.
Yep, and one thing we know about Alcaraz, he's not a one-slam wonder.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
47-4 on the season, but he's 0-1 lifetime at Toronto. 17-2 at the Masters 1000 events this year with two Masters titles. That's why I bring that up. Yeah, I mean, it's a tall task for sure to win them both. He's going to hit the ground running in Cincinnati to get it started. But it'll be interesting for me personally, and I'll ask you about this, Richard, too, to see Carlitos back in action, to see Iga Świątek, who's now 47-7 on the season, to see her maybe renew rivalries with Sabalenka. And Rybakina, who's 19-2 at the 1,000 level this year. So, I mean, storylines that have been carrying through the whole season are still there. It should be pretty cool to watch what these top names can do and see if we can, you know, maybe continue to see the rise of Alcaraz, Runa, see if Medvedev can finally find his form against someone like Alcaraz. You know, a lot of cool storylines. It's just getting started on the hard courts.
Absolutely, and I think it's this week is important for Medvedev because Novak isn't there, and so this is his hard courts or his surface. So I think it's a big week for him to go deep.
Yeah, could be for sure. He's opens with either Vasek Pospisil or Matteo Arnaldi from Italy. Could face Musetti, who already beat Nishioka in the third round. Possible Fritz in the round of 16. Rublev's in his half of the draw, as is Francis and Raonic that we mentioned. Casper Ruud, the pitcher, the guy who threw out the first ball for the Toronto Blue Jays game, he's in the action. Let's see if he'll do better on hard courts than he did on grass. I'm sure he will. Last year's U.S. Open runner-up, but yeah, just so much is in front of us. It's a great time of the hard court season. We're all thinking about the U.S. Open a little bit, but we got our focus on these great events. It's going to be cool. It's going to be fun, especially when you add Venus Williams in there. I think Venus is playing Madison Keys tonight. Am I right about that, Eric?
Yes, she is playing Madison Keys. So, again, that's going to be an interesting first rounder. just to kind of see where Venus is, and Keys, who had a great Wimbledon as well. So that's going to be a very intriguing first rounder.
Yeah, so much to look forward to. Any parting shots for you guys before we say goodbye for now?
I would like to thank the fans of Washington, D.C., because I watched most of that men's doubles final and the support. It was a really fun match to watch, a lot of great, you know, net play. And to see the fans that into it, I respect the way they respect doubles there.
Nice one, by the way. And I actually sort of thought it might be good to talk about that a little bit, because what I found interesting about the men's doubles draw is that it was stacked with some really talented singles players. We had Dimitrov. We had a team of Tiafoe and Hurkic. We had Korda and Eubanks. We had McDonald and Shelton, of course, who made the final. We had Murray and Evans, who played some great tennis, winning their defeating Krajicek and Pavic in their first match. And then in the end, we get a winner from Argentina, Gonzalez and Molteni, who are just tried and true doubles specialists. It must be really special for these doubles players to compete against these guys, to get a big stage, packed stadiums in some cases, and I think Eric can vouch, in some cases when doubles matches were happening, they were way more packed than the stadium because of the personalities out there. So City Open is one of the events, like a lot, similar to Indian Wells, it does a great job with the doubles and has a lot of singles players in there, and it just makes everything more exciting, even for the normal doubles players.
Yes, and I just as a parting thought, I would say if anyone has never been to DC, the event, definitely try to add it to your bucket list, especially just because the access to the players, because the grounds are so intimate that you'll definitely be able to see the players, like you said, doubles on the practice courts or just kind of maneuvering around. So just because the grounds are so intimate that if you want to get up close to many of your favorite players, D.C. is a great place to do that.
Yeah, and an absolutely great city as well. And Eric, I did want to ask you, actually, U.S. Open's got the Honey Deuce as their signature cocktail. What's the signature of the, you mentioned at the top that the refreshments, the food offerings at the City Open were better than ever. So what's the catch there? What's the exciting go-to snack or drink?
I don't know if there's like a signature cocktail there yet. They definitely had different concoctions and different things going on. I would definitely say that probably what's one of the cooler things is that the famous chef restaurateur Jose Andreas has a small area there. We're serving some of his signature sandwiches and things. So that's a very DC. Cool. Culinary thing to try out if you've never been to a Jose Andreas restaurant. So that's probably the go-to thing to do.
Did your credential cover it?
No comment.
Wait, because I know it's important to Richard, you got to tell us what are the top beers selling over there? How cold are they in that oppressive City Open humidity? Talk to Richard about cold beers.
Oh yeah, I didn't partake of any of the beers, but I will say there was one vendor that was like selling some signature DC IPAs. So there is that as well. Some local brews to try as well.
Very cool, Richard.
It gets hot. It gets really hot there. People, you gotta hydrate.
Yeah, you gotta have a beer once you finish up your last article, right, Richard? Only then.
Well, in your case, sometimes it's before you finish.
I'm just not so sure about that. Come on now. All right, guys, it's been great. I'm glad we got to catch up. Eric, awesome job at City Open. Looking forward to, you said it was your ninth trip this year?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to number 10. Great work, and we were lucky to have you there. And readers, please go back and flip through our archives. Lots of good stuff on the City Open. And thanks for your insights today, Richard. Thanks as always. And you guys, let's talk again in the not-too-distant future. We'll wrap up these Masters 1000 and look ahead to the U.S. Open in the coming weeks.
Yeah, thank you both. It's been really fun to catch up. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Cheers, you guys. This edition of the Lucky Let Cord podcast is a wrap. Special thanks to Eric Goodris for joining us and for doing such great work at the Mubadala City DC Open in Washington, D.C. last week. Of course, special thanks to Richard Pagliaro for joining us. All your insights are appreciated. Thank you all for listening. Want you guys to know where you can find us on social media and whatnot. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/tennisnow. You can also find us on Twitter at @tennis_now, though it's not called Twitter anymore. It's called X. Does it really make a difference? It might to you. Maybe it does to us, but that's another conversation for another time. You guys can also find us on Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate it if you rate, review, subscribe to this podcast. It would mean a lot to us. Just go to Apple Podcasts, type in Lucky Letcourt Podcast in your search engine. You can also find us on Spotify or wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. It means a lot to us, and we appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you next time in a couple weeks. We'll talk a little bit more about the Masters 1000 events in North America and do a final look ahead to the U.S. Open. Can't wait till then. Enjoy the tennis in the meantime, and thanks for listening.